and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Another mass shooting in California. Seven people have been killed. CBS's Matt Piper reports.
The seven victims were killed at two different locations. One, a farm. Another, a distribution center just a mile away. It happened in Half Moon Bay, California, south of San Francisco. San Mateo County Sheriff Christina Corpus says a suspect is in custody and that he acted alone.
The suspect, identified as Chung Lee Zhao, a 67-year-old Half Moon Bay resident.
They believe he's a co-worker of the people he shot. Governor Gavin Newsom tweets, tragedy upon tragedy. Matt Piper, CBS News.
An eighth person who was shot is in critical condition. The death toll from Saturday's mass shooting at a ballroom dance hall in Monterey Park, California, is now up to 11. Police say the suspect went to a second dance hall that night, and as CBS's Max Darrow reports...
Brandon Say was in the lobby of the Lai Lai Ballroom when the suspect entered. Say said he lunged at the suspect, grabbed the gun, and there was a struggle. He said he ordered the suspect to leave, then called the police while holding the suspect's gun.
The firearm, which was wrestled away from the suspect at the Alhambra scene, was a 9mm caliber semi-automatic MAC-10 assault weapon.
The gunman's motive is unknown. Max Darrow, CBS News, Monterey Park, California.
Police say the suspect was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. In Memphis, Tennessee, the family of Tyree Nichols has been shown the police body cam footage of the January 7th traffic stop that preceded his death. An attorney for the family says the video shows that the confrontation was violent and appalling. Nichols' mother says...
All I heard my son say was, what did I do? Where's the humanity in all of this? You just beat him like a dog in the street.
29-year-old Tyree Nichols' mother could only watch part of the deadly confrontation between Memphis police and her son.
That's CBS's Elise Preston reporting. Five Memphis officers involved in the incident have been fired. More nasty weather will take aim at much of the nation. CBS's Jim Crisula reports.
The National Weather Service says there's a 3 out of 5 risk of severe weather, including tornadoes tomorrow from the middle and upper Texas coast, across southern Louisiana eastward into the Florida Panhandle. North of there, a developing winter storm will dump several inches of snow from northern Texas north and east to southeastern Michigan.
Ground and air travel across much of the nation's midsection will likely be affected by weather tomorrow and Wednesday. A lawmaker in Oregon has introduced a bill to ban the sale of kangaroo parts in that state. It would affect mostly soccer cleats, which use kangaroo leather. Nike, which makes soccer shoes, is based in Oregon. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
Do you know what people see when they Google you? Search engines don't always get it right. And when they're wrong, it's your reputation on the line. So what do you do when you don't agree with your search results? Call Reputation Defender at 800-401-6681. Reputation Defender by Norton is one of the most trusted names in online reputation repair. We have over a decade of experience in fixing people's search results, and we can help you too. Using cutting-edge approaches, Reputation Defender pushes unflattering information down to lower pages of your search results, where few people ever look. We also promote the good stuff so that it rises to the top, letting you put your best foot forward. Your good name is too valuable to leave to the whims of a Google algorithm. You owe it to yourself to take control with Reputation Defender. Visit www.reputationdefender.com or call 800-401-6681 for free advice on your situation. 800-401-6681. That's 800-401-6681.
Remember when you could turn on the radio and hear a song you'd never heard before? A song that would make you tap your feet, snap your fingers, maybe get up and dance a little? A song that once you heard it made you say, that's a surefire hit. Those days are gone. Or are they? Tune in on Sunday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. and catch Seth Faces the Music on WFHR. The premise is simple. Every week I pick a theme and find songs that fit the theme. It's so simple yet so, so good. Join me, won't you, for Seth Faces the Music every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on locally grown radio WFHR.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. Here is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Tuesday, January 24th. The Wood County State Wildlife Advisory Committee will meet at 5:30 p.m. at the Sandhill Wildlife Area Outdoor Skills Facility in Babcock. The Central Wisconsin State Fair Subcommittee will meet at 6 p.m. at the Fair Office in Marshfield. The City of Wisconsin Rapids Police and Fire Commission will meet at 8 a.m. in the first floor conference room at City Hall. The Waterworks and Lighting Commission will hold their special commission meeting at 8:30 a.m. in their conference room. In Portage County, the Space and Properties Committee will meet at 3:30 p.m. in the Annex Conference Rooms 1 and 2, immediately followed by the Joint Space and Properties and Healthcare Center meeting. The McMillan Library Family Fun Night will be from 6 to 7 p.m. on January 24th. Come make a snow globe with your kids using plastic jars, figurines, and glitter. And that's the news update on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Overcast skies overnight with lows around 23. West winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 29. Overcast tomorrow night, lows dip down to about 21. Upper 20s Wednesday and Thursday with a chance for snow Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 26.
Serving central Wisconsin since 1940.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
Competitive I am.
And so it goes.
Prick me to start giving blood. They tell me that there's been a contest to see who can fill up their bag the fastest.
And so it goes.
5 minutes, 4 seconds. I got done and I said, did I win? And they said, you were the fastest all day.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Wisconsin. Welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. Thank you for joining us today during your lunch hour, the noon hour. At 12:30, we are going to be joined by Phil Rocco, Marquette Associate Professor of Political Science, who before, back in the election cycle, wrote a piece on what a flat tax could look like in Wisconsin and why there's very few people that would benefit from that. But he is going to talk to us today about the plan that has actually been proposed by the Wisconsin legislature and what that could actually look like. So stick around for that conversation. But coming up first, we are joined by Bob Keefe, who is the executive director of E2 Environmental Entrepreneurs, which is a national nonpartisan group of business owners, investors, and professionals who leverage economic research and their business perspective to advance policies that are good for the environment and good for the economy. And at the break, we were talking about K-cups, and you said someone texted in about the K-cups. Because we're all skeptical now.
Yeah, and so there was a study done by Canadian researchers who found that using the individual K-cups is actually better for the environment than making the whole pot of coffee.
Yes.
So Texter from the 414 says, if I understand how this was determined, a K-cup is a definite amount in a specific usage, whereas making a pot is using a whole bunch of coffee, whether it all gets consumed or not. The savings to the earth come from using less coffee beans, less farming, etc. This is how I understand it. So thank you from the 414.
Bob, what do you think? Do you buy that?
You know, I have a hard time buying that. I mean, yes, we are taxing our environment with coffee farms and with water and all of that. But gosh, just throwing those little cups in the garbage or even recycling them and knowing that they're probably not being recycled just seems like a bad deal.
I agree.
I'm sticking with the Mr. Coffee myself.
With the coffee pot. There you go. All right. Well, Bob Keefe, thank you so much for joining the show today. And so tell us more before we, because we're going to talk more about clean jobs in Wisconsin and the economic impact that being, how you can both be good for the economy and for the environment. But tell us more just about environmental entrepreneurs.
Absolutely. And listen, I'm so excited to be with you guys. What a cool idea for a show, taking things like flat taxes and climate change and making them fun and interesting. I was hoping you were going to start with a couple of climate jokes or something, Kristen. No? You got any good climate jokes?
Do I have any good climate jokes?
I've been thinking all weekend about this. I'm waiting for the opening. I've been thinking of all weekend about something to use on your show that would be befitting of such a wise and cool and interesting show in such an interesting state. Just for the record. Can I try it?
Go ahead.
So we all know about, and what's a better joke than a fart joke, right? We all know about cows. We all know about methane and how that's adding to global warming, right?
Yeah.
So why did the Wisconsin dairy farmer worry so much about global warming?
Why?
Kristen? Because his cows kept cutting the cheese. Come on, huh?
All right. Did you come up with that?
I did.
Nice.
As far as you know. As far as you know.
Golf clap.
It was either me or one of my daughters.
That was pretty clever. Cutting the cheese. Smell our dairy air.
That's... But all joking aside, climate change is a serious issue, right?
Yeah.
And what you asked me about my organization, E2 Environmental Entrepreneurs. We're a national network of more than 10,000 people, 10,000 business owners, investors, and others who care about the economy and care about the environment. And we do a lot of work around making the economic case and telling the economic story about how the economy and the environment are not at odds, but we can't have one without the other. And what we're seeing now in this country, in this world, in your state, is that the economic costs of climate change are adding up. Climate change is battering our economy, from farmers to the outdoor industry to business people to everyday homeowners. Good news is, we can do something about it. We're finally doing something about it, and we're creating a lot of jobs, driving economic growth by doing so and reducing those costs that we're all feeling.
So, because I think to a certain extent, we understand when you talk about clean energy jobs, it's jobs that work in windmills or solar power or something. So, like, what kind of, like, how broad or what are we actually talking about when we talk about clean energy jobs?
Right, right. Well, naturally, you're going to think about the wind turbine worker or
totally.
The guy or woman installing solar panels on your roof, right? But the clean energy space is a lot bigger than that. And my organization, E2, has been tracking clean energy jobs around the country for more than a decade now. And what we now know, Kristen, is that there are more than 3 million people, about 3.2 million people that work in clean energy in every single state in the country. And then in Wisconsin alone, we're talking about 71,000 Wisconsinites, according to our latest Clean Jobs America report and a companion report that we do called Clean Jobs Midwest that breaks all this stuff down for every state and every sector. So when you look at those 71,000 jobs in Wisconsin, about 6,500 of them are in renewable energy. Yes, the solar and the wind folks like you're talking about. Another 6,000 work in clean vehicles, supply chains for the car companies that are making electric vehicles, or we track any job that is related to a car that has a plug in it. So hybrid plug-in vehicles, for instance, those sort of things. But the biggest part of the clean energy space is something we don't really think about too much, which is energy efficiency. About 58,000 people work in energy efficiency related jobs in Wisconsin. What does that look like? Those are construction workers putting insulation in our roofs or changing out our windows in our houses, in our offices, in our homes. It's electricians working on LED lighting systems in our big office buildings in our cities and in our towns that are saving consumers and businesses money with every monthly electric bill. A lot of it is around the HVACs work, heating, air conditioning, ventilation work. Companies that are swapping out dirty old gas or other furnaces with electric and more energy efficiency models, things like that. And by the way, it's also all of the people that are working in factories, I think including some in Wisconsin, that are making Energy Star appliances, whether it's better dishwashers and refrigerators that are going in our homes or huge energy efficient heating and air conditioning systems that are going into office buildings around the country. So the good news is these jobs are spread across a lot of occupations. They typically pay a little bit better than jobs that similar jobs in non-clean energy businesses. And with some of the policies that we recently passed in Washington and elsewhere, there's going to be a lot more of them.
So it sounds like, I mean, at least as you just described it, it's a pretty broad definition of what can fall under because I would not have thought that just working on the appliances that are high efficiency appliances is then categorized under clean energy jobs. And so, did you know that, Jane? And so that's like, that's really encouraging, because I think you're right. I think my mind goes to people working on installing solar panels, or people working on the wind and EV, yes, for sure. But even the manufacturing of products that are just energy efficient is really interesting, because I wouldn't have thought that, especially in a manufacturing state like Wisconsin historically. I think more people should know that that also falls under what the clean energy sector can do for jobs.
Absolutely. And just for the record, our data is based on data and the way that the Department of Energy tracks it, the U.S. Department of Energy. So that's how they track energy jobs, period. So they also track jobs in oil and gas and jobs in coal, jobs in nuclear, et cetera. And this is how the Department of Energy tracks clean energy jobs now. And if you look across it, all those sectors in energy, there are about 2.5 times as many people that work in clean energy now than work in fossil fuel energy, believe it or not.
Wow.
And that matters in a place like Wisconsin, which, by the way, doesn't have a lot of coal or gas the last time I was there, but it does have some cold winters. And it does have some energy efficiency people, right?
I know that twang makes me think that you're from the South, and so you're not less likely to have experienced as many cold winters as we have.
I've done my best to avoid winters my entire life, so yes.
We're talking to Bob Keefe, who's the executive director of E2 Environmental Entrepreneurs. Jane, do you have a question?
I do. Bob, I just want to say, you give me hope that more businesses are embracing this, because it's always seemed completely counterproductive to me that you're going to destroy the environment and you're going to kill off your customers. This does not seem like a good business model.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, the other thing is, from a business perspective, this is a bottom line issue as well, right? Some of the biggest drivers of clean energy growth in this country have been really big technology companies. And why is that? Because they use really big data centers to make things like this internet chat happen and to make our email happen and everything we do online. Those data centers use a ton of electricity, and they want the cheapest electricity there is. And right now, the cheapest electricity there is, hands down, in just about every single part of the country, just about every single part of the world, is solar and wind. So a lot of the solar and the wind growth that we've seen over the years has been because businesses and major employers and major users of electricity are looking for a cheaper route. The good news is we're here.
Absolutely. It's here. So when we come back, because I want to bring you through the break, because I want to talk more specifically about Wisconsin and, you know, what creates what because it sounds like we're top 20 for how many clean energy jobs we have here.
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And so talking about maybe how we got to where we are right now, what can encourage more job growth politically, how this is faring. So when we come back from our from this break, Bob Keefe, executive director of E2 Environmental Entrepreneurs, will still be here. Maybe he'll even have another funny joke for us about cows cutting the cheese in the derriere of Wisconsin. All right, this is As Goes Wisconsin. Oh, oh yeah.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy. You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year. At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with a link.
Okay.
Smart.
Protect your legacy.
Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Kirsten from Pentatonix. We've all learned how to cope with more time alone. With more time spent isolated or at home, the need for companionship has grown. If you've considered adding a pet to your family, please check with your local shelters and foster organizations. Stray pet numbers have grown immensely over the past several years, and the trauma caused to these animals is devastating. Adopt pets, they need us more than we know. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crudités at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were crudy takes.
Crudies takes. See, man? It all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news, talk, and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. I got Jane Matinere on the board, and we are talking to Bob Keefe, who is the executive director of E2 Environmental Entrepreneurs. And I was kind of surprised, I was going to say, when I found out that Wisconsin ranks number 17 out of all 50 states in clean energy jobs. And so what, as far as, I know you were talking about the Midwest jobs report, but what is it in Wisconsin? Is it what you were saying before as far as those high efficiency appliances?
Well, there has been a lot of growth in energy efficiency in Wisconsin, and that's jobs at manufacturing plants making Energy Star appliances for sure. Another huge area that saw a real jump last year in Wisconsin and nationally, Kristen, and will continue to, is around electric vehicles. Look, every single car maker in the country, every single car maker in the world is shifting to electric vehicles right now. And last year alone in Wisconsin, there was a 26% increase in the number of people that are working in electric vehicle related jobs. These are, again, electric vehicles, hybrid plug-ins, et cetera. More than 6,000 people now work in Wisconsin in that area. So it's going to be huge. And when we think of some of the federal policies that have recently passed, the two biggest is the Inflation Reduction Act, and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the big bipartisan infrastructure act. Those are going to create tremendous tax benefits and investments into clean energy, including into electric vehicles, but also into wind, into solar, into energy efficiency. So that is going to be, we think, is one of the biggest job drivers this country has ever seen. Sounds like hyperbole, but it's not.
It's not.
Or hyperbole. It sounds like hyperbole, too,
hyperbole.
By the way.
I just love your accent. So, you know, we talked about a little bit about this on Friday, because Wisconsin right now, as you referenced before, we do have very cold winters comparatively, but comparatively internally, our winters are only getting warmer and warmer. In fact, in Milwaukee and Green Bay, more than any other city in the country is seeing the biggest overall average increase in temperature each winter, which is a problem. Like, we're seeing the problems in our Great Lakes not having enough ice and what that does to a lot of different things. And so in that conversation, we saw that $165 billion it's cost to clean up the 18 major climate catastrophes that happened in 2022. And so as the core part of E2 being what's both good for the environment and good for the economy, like, what, how does this come down to, like, your mission statement of convincing people that the both can exist together?
Right, right. Well, look at those numbers a little bit more, Chris. And I mean, nationally, yes, it was $165 billion worth of damage last year alone. In Wisconsin alone, it was more than $2 billion. And if you look over time, most of that has been from flooding, from some of the things that you were just talking about, when you have a faster snow melt, when you have extreme rainfall, which the state has experienced in spades in recent years. You know, of the $17 billion in climate-related disasters in Wisconsin since 1980, about half of that, more than half of that, $8 billion has been from flooding alone. That's according to NOAA, some of those numbers that you were talking about. And so what does that look like? What does that mean to our economy? Well, it means that farmers' fields are getting flooded out. When farmers' fields get flooded out, that obviously impacts one of the biggest sectors of the state's economy, but it also impacts us all at the grocery line, right? It causes the price of food and other goods to go up. Look at what happens when snowpack is not what it used to be. That's a big hit on Wisconsin's outdoor industry, for instance, which is a $9 billion industry. 90,000 people work in outdoor-related jobs in your state. That's skiing and fishing and everything else that's getting battered by climate change.
And so how long have you been working? Because you also wrote a book. You're the author of Climatenomics. Thank you. Washington, Wall Street, and the Economic Battle to Save Our Planet. And so how, since you've started working in this industry, I guess, of evangelizing that these two can coexist, how much have you seen attitudes change, specifically on Wall Street and of business owners?
Well, it's getting to be an easier story to tell and an easier story to understand. Look, I mean, yes, climate change has been happening since the beginning of history, but the past 8 years have been the 8 warmest years on record globally. In the past decade, we've had 7 of the most expensive years for climate disasters. So this is hitting people in the pocketbook, right? I mean, look at homeowners insurance. Homeowners insurance is up 50% over the past decade. Anybody who owns a home is paying more because those insurance companies are getting hammered by hurricanes in the east and fires in the west, et cetera. So to me, the discussion is changing. People are starting to understand that this is a pocketbook issue. And when something becomes a pocketbook issue, it becomes more relevant to people and they care more about it. And what I like to say, Kristen, during the break, we were talking a little bit about the politics of all of this. What I like to say is, look, I don't care if you believe in science. I don't care if you like polar bears. I don't care if you drive a Prius or a pickup truck. The fact of the matter is climate change is hitting you in the pocketbook.
Yeah.
And we've got to do something about it. And again, the good news is, thanks to some of these policies that we passed at the federal level, some of the stuff that we hope the state is moving forward in Wisconsin, we'll be able to not only reduce some of these costs of climate change, but drive jobs and economic growth while doing it.
Absolutely. Well, for any of our listeners who want more information, where can they get more information either about you, your book, or E2?
Well, thank you for that. Absolutely. Go to E2.org to find out more about E2, and you can look up some of this data on the state and both jobs and costs, and also nationally. If you want to know about the book, go to climatenomicsbook.com, climatenomicsbook.com.
Awesome. Well, Bob Keefe, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Thank you for the joke, and we'll have to have you back when the next jobs report comes out.
I'd like that. Thank you, Kristen.
All right. Have a great day. Coming up next, Phil Rocco from Marquette University will be here to talk about the implications of a flat tax. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
WAUK 540.
Locally grown radio, your home for news, talk, and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things, even committed some crimes. but I am not a criminal.
Youth Advocate Programs is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. Learn how at yapinc.org.
Pride.
Left corner three on the way. Got it.
Excellence.
Yes, it counts. And a foul.
Commitment.
Drops the hammer. Thank you and good night.
For Badgers, they're not just words. They're words to live by.
It's over. Let's have a party, Badger Nation.
This is your radio home for the Badgers.
Catch all the Badgers men's basketball action in the Big Ten this year right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
I'm Tumani. When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things. I committed some crimes and even got shot, but I'm not a criminal.
That's right. I'm Jamal. I work for Youth Advocate Programs. Yeah, I was Tumani's advocate, helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, get a job, and work hard to see a better future for himself. If you have a change of mindset, you can have a change of action.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
No, she's a good student and a great kid. As Jalen's YAP advocate, I'm always here for her. With the Youth Advocate Programs, I was able to connect with Jalen.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, 86% of participants were arrest-free. YAP works.
And now, I'm a YAP advocate, helping kids like me find a better way.
Youth Advocate Programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn how at yapinc.org.
We may be thousands of miles apart, but we can still connect. And when we do, we make things better. At Child Fund, we connect children all around the world with what they need to grow up healthy, educated, and safe. Together, we co-create connections that help millions of children who live in poverty worldwide, and their families, and their communities, and you. Join us. Together, we can make the world a better place. Two small worlds at a time. Visit childfund.org to learn more.
Hello, music lovers. Tim the Polka Guy here to let you know the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show is moving to a new time slot, 12 noon every Saturday. So join me for the best in old-time music every Saturday at 12 noon right here on the new WFHR 97.5 FM and AM 1320.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. Portage County property tax payments are due by January 31st. Payments should be made on or before January 31st to the payee listed on your first installment tab at the bottom of your tax bill. Payments can be made on the county website with a fee. You can pay in person at the Portage County Treasurer's Office Monday through Friday from 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Wind turbines are being examined in southern Wisconsin after one collapsed near the town of Herman last week. The Dodge County Wind Farm has debris scattered across the field and a large crater from the blades and the top portion of the wind turbine falling 400 feet to the ground. No one was hurt, but neighbors heard the crash. The company who owns the turbines, NextEra Energy Resources, is checking out the other turbines on the farm as a quality control measure. They say turbine malfunctions are rare and this was an isolated incident. And that's the news update on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Overcast skies overnight with lows around 23. West winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 29. Overcast tomorrow night, lows dip down to about 21. Upper 20s Wednesday and Thursday with a chance for snow Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 26.
Civic Media app, thank you for tuning in. And a reminder that if you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast, which you can find on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts. And today, I know you're right on this, Jane, but today is the first day that you can start turning in your taxes. They're starting to accept if you want to get your tax refund. I don't know if I'll get a tax refund or not this year,
really?
But we'll find out. But with that, we thought we maybe would talk a little bit more about what future taxes could potentially look like in the great state of Wisconsin. So Dr. Phil Rocco is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, and this is his, I think, third time joining us on the show.
Three-peat? Is that a hat trick?
Three-peat. I like that. Yeah. So, friend of the show, officially, I would say. And all right. I invited you on because back in election season, when the flat tax was just an idea that Tim Michaels kind of threw out there, and then the conservatives were very upset that people took him as at his word. Well, it's not actually a plan. And now we actually do have a plan. But in the hypothetical stages, you wrote a guest article for Recombobulation Area about what a flat tax would do for most of us in Wisconsin. And it was great. It was very detailed. And now we actually have a plan that has been proposed that would take, I think, is it 3.25? A flat tax of 3.25%?
Right.
So
yeah, it would be a flat tax of 3.25%.
Which is pretty
low. Yes.
Which is pretty low.
Like for comparison, like right now, the tax rates go from 3.45, I think, all the way up to 7.56% for the top bracket. So that's a lot of revenue disappearing overnight. And the thing that was interesting was that when we wrote that piece back in the fall, like there were two different versions of the flat tax that were sort of floating out there. One of them was a flat tax with a slightly higher rate, mm-hmm. which meant that, some people's taxes would in fact go up. Lower income folks' taxes would go up, but you wouldn't have, as much revenue disappearing. The other option was this kind of flat tax, which just brings down the top rates to the lowest, or in this case, below the lowest rate. And what it means in practical terms is two things. One is that it can only be described as sort of like a bonanza for people at the top part of the income distribution. So the richest 1.4% of taxpayers under this proposal get 1/3 of the total kind of benefits, right? In monetary terms.
And how many people does that end up being? Is that just like,
I mean, one.
So it's 1% of our population?
Right. That's, it's a pretty small number. So, I mean, I think, just a pretty small number of taxpayers.
And do we know what threshold of how much those people are making?
So that 1.4%, that's people making 500,000 and over.
Okay.
Right. So they're going to see, that 1.4% is going to see about, 1/3 of the tax breaks. The, 70% of the taxpayers are going to receive only about 17.8% of the total tax cut. So, I mean, in practical terms, this is not going to be, there's going to be like a few movies and maybe dinner, per year for most filers. But for the people at the top of the income distribution, it's like a windfall. It's a lot. So that's the first thing, just in terms of like, the rates, are going to seem like they come down, right? But in reality, most of the benefit is concentrated at the very top of the income distribution. The only thing, the other thing, and we can talk about this more maybe, after the break, is that it's not just who the tax cuts are going to. It's also the fact that every year when this is fully implemented, over $5 billion in revenue is just going to disappear. And if you put that in practical terms, it means that you could cut something like, the entire UW system budget and all funding for corrections, and you would still need to cut more in order to account for that. And you can do all kinds of comparisons, like it's more than four times all state K-12 spending, more than four times like the state and local state. Share revenue to local governments. Like, it's a lot of money.
Also basically almost as much as our surplus is right now.
Yeah. I mean, so this idea is like the surplus is going to maybe like hide the effects of this for like a year. But then once it's fully implemented, it's a lot of revenue going out the door very, very quickly in a way that would be very dramatically, would result in some dramatic negative economic effects for the state, which we can talk about. But the idea that LeMahieu and Republicans are kind of pushing here is that like the surplus means that we're overtaxed. But the surplus is really sort of like a one-time perfect storm because of a variety of different trends. It's not like part of a bigger trend. So what that means is that once that surplus is gone, this is going to be just a dramatic reduction in, or require a dramatic reduction in state spending. Or alternatively, they could just raise, you know, the sales tax, but they'd have to raise it a lot in order to make up the difference, which is, you know, a regressive tax, a tax that's mm-hmm. going to fall mostly on working class, middle class folks. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to like project the future and like how this could work out. But the bottom line is distributionally for most people, this is going to mean not a lot of savings in terms of taxes and potentially huge cuts to vital services that people have come to rely on.
Phil, just a couple things. First of all, I can't be the only person who just lies awake at night, tossing and turning, worried that the wealthiest 1.4% in Wisconsin are struggling to buy a third vacation home. It's so painful, and I've lost so much sleep. But additionally, a couple of years ago, didn't they try this, something like this, in Kansas? And they Yes. essentially broke Kansas?
Yes, this is what was called the Kansas experiment, right? What governor Sam Brownback at the time described as an adrenaline shot in the heart of the Kansas economy. And it was the largest tax cut they'd ever seen in Kansas. It brought down the top rate from like 6.4% down to 4.9%. So that the wealthiest people were paying basically the same marginal rate as the middle class. And the idea was that plus a bunch of different other things, we're going to generate all of this new investment in Kansas. Employers were going to start setting up shop there. You're going to see this huge kind of multiplier effect. In fact, the reverse happened, right? So what that meant was that the state had to slash spending in fairly exorbitant ways, right? Cutting money for highways, cutting money for the state Medicaid program, cutting money for schools, like so that janitors and librarians couldn't get hired. And what that did was it reduced all of the sort of like economic multiplier effect that government spending has. So like when government spends, it means that people have contracts, private contractors who do business with the government get hired. But there are all of these sort of attendant knock-on effects of government spending. And as a result, when you simply cut, you know, and, you know, Kansas cut a great deal, it basically meant that it couldn't fund a lot of these programs. And actually, it made it much sort of less attractive to come into the state because the state just wasn't offering a lot of services. So population growth kind of flattened out. And then by any sort of like any economic indicator, job growth, economic development or investment, the state just started tanking. And so by August 2014, S&P downgraded the state's credit rating. Like it was an economic disaster of unmitigated proportions that ultimately like led to Sam Brownback, who was once, I think, seen as a kind of potential presidential contender. It was a disgrace for him, and he sort of like left public life.
Oh my gosh.
Right. And so it's really hard to overstate just like what a just political and economic disaster was. And they guess what? They ended up repealing it because it was such a disaster.
So we're talking to Dr. Phil Rocco, who is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, about the proposed flat tax in Wisconsin. And has anyone ran that Kansas story by Lamahieu and Voss and been like, hey, how would we make it not, how would we avoid being like Kansas?
Well, there's this like alternative, like this like a speculative fiction universe of like what people say the whole Kansas experiment was really about. Like, so there's a whole like literature, like literature that like comes from conservative think tanks. It's like, no, it actually wasn't, you know, the tax cuts that caused all of these things. And they point to like any number of like a concatenation of other factors. Like, well, it must have been something else, right? But when you look at Kansas, and you can just do the comparison to all of its neighboring states, that all of the different things that people suggest were going on in Kansas, they were also going on in those neighboring states. And what happened was like none of those neighboring states faced essentially the economic cliff that Kansas did. And so it's really hard to conclude that it's not the, you know, this yeah. Kansas experiment. But the thing is, it's really inconvenient for them to talk about this. I mean, it's because it's a really great example of just what it means to get rid of. So like the argument that I think is being made is that like a lot of this spending that's going on is like wasteful, right? And that like it's not a big deal to cut over $5 billion a year because there's so much waste. But the reality is like waste or, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse, like, is a really, really small percentage, right? If you were able to like calculate it, it's like really small percentage of what government actually does. And most of what government does is actually help to stimulate economic growth in the, you know, a variety of regions in the state. And so when you just, I think people can't actually conceptualize what that scale of cuts means for their everyday life, for the highways, right? You think about like the worst highway you've ever driven on in Wisconsin and imagine it getting perpetually worse. Like that's what $5 billion a year in outflow of revenue, you know, will make happen. Alternatively, you know, it's like a sale, potentially like that spending cuts plus a prohibitively high sales tax for a lot of people. So the argument I think that is getting made is that like, that somehow this is going to induce population growth in the state and that it's actually like the progressivity of the tax code that's inhibiting that. The thing I would point to is that the projected population growth for Minnesota, more progressive tax code, is 12% out to 2040. Wisconsin's is already only 3% projected population growth out to 2040. There's no way on earth that, you know, what's going on here or what might be going on here is a, you know, a population surge as a result of a flat tax. There's, you know, it defies the most basic common sense to make that argument.
And we can keep talking about it after the break because we only have about 2 minutes left before we have to go to the commercial, but it's also because I hear this a lot, and you think of like the states that are growing fastest, a lot of them do have sometimes no income tax, Texas, Florida. But they're also, I always say this, they're also a lot warmer than us, but I think that's so interesting to compare it to Minnesota, who's arguably colder than us, and you got to be like a Vikings fan, but you know, and the fact that I didn't know that discrepancy as far as what their population trend has been, despite it being a much more... It's in the last 12, 13 years, like the discrepancy between policies and how much they've been different with all things being the same as far as weather, climate, culture. And so we'll talk more about that when we get back.
Yeah, also, absolutely.
Yeah. And there's so many different ways I wanted to go with this, and we'll only have you for 8 minutes. So we'll just have to have you back, but stay with us. Dr. Phil Rocco is here. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
What are the governor's priorities for Wisconsin? Tony Evers will lay out his second-term plans during his State of the State address January 24th. You can hear it live on your local civic media radio station. Will abortion rights, Medicaid expansion, and legalizing marijuana be the top issues? Your favorite hosts also provide insight by breaking down the governor's address. The State of the State address live Tuesday, January 24th at 7 p.m. here on your local civic media radio station, streaming on the civic media app.
I'm looking at the phone lines, I'm seeing some familiar faces. I was reminded of Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
I was reminded of Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
As you go about your daily life, look closer. As you gather with family and friends, look closer. Right in your community, there are youth who don't have the home, warmth, and healing you have. So, look closer. Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth 50 years strong. Tonight, 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed. And tomorrow, they will wake up surrounded by love. Every youth who walks into Covenant House gets clean clothes, hot meals, medical care, and a safe place to sleep 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in sites across America to help them fulfill the great promise of their lives. So, look closer at Covenant House and help us fight youth homelessness. To help or get help, go to covenanthouse.org.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are talking to Dr. Phil Rocco, who is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University, about the potential implications of a Wisconsin flat tax, which the current proposal sits at 3.25%, and what that could mean for Wisconsin. And this isn't even before the flat tax. Since I've moved home or moved back, there's been conversations around no income tax and what that could do. Mm-hmm. And there are some states, what is there, like 9 in total that have no income tax? But I think of, you know, Tennessee, Florida, Texas, I think Alaska, maybe Wyoming. But some of the states that can generate enough revenue otherwise to function without having an income tax. So what it kind of has to be in place, as far as you understand it, for a low to no income tax to work in a state?
Yeah, so like some states have deposits of natural resources that they can have franchise taxes on, right? I think about Alaska, you know, out west, there are states that just have a naturally occurring resource that you can sort of tax and generate revenue off of that, okay? Other states have booming industries that bring in people who don't live in the state as tourists frequently, and you can use sales taxes much more effectively there because you know, you have such a kind of booming tourist industry in dollar terms, right? So what ultimately you have to do if you don't want to have an income tax is, like, one option is you have to have some other sort of resource there. It's like a special tax that you can just leverage. The other thing you could do is create a really regressive tax code, right? That where you're relying on taxes that mainly fall on people who are poor, or, you know, working class, middle class folks, rely more heavily on property tax, which is something that states, you know, used to do. Wisconsin was one of the big pioneers in the early 20th century, in 1911, in really moving the state to a progressive income tax, because property is so hard to effectively and efficiently tax without, you know, a measure of corruption kind of getting involved there. So that was the big complaint about in the 19th century. It's really easy to hide property value and property wealth, especially back then. The other thing that you can do is just, like, slash services and just, like, you know, make government a lot less effective at doing the things we expected to do. And that's something that you definitely see in states that don't have kind of effective income tax regimes. But I think the thing that ultimately, you know, is sort of happening in Wisconsin is, you know, essentially every time the state cuts taxes, and by the way, we are already at the lowest mm-hmm. level of tax collection, lowest rate of tax collection on record, right? That's how much taxes have come down since the 1990s. Like, it is, we have really sucked out a lot of revenue in the state. And what that means, it's not like the demand goes away. It just means that either we're saying, you know, that we're not going to meet that demand, or we're pushing off the responsibility onto other levels of government, like local governments, or, which is why you see so many bond measures and millage increases in school districts now, right? Because there's still demand. We still have to pay for things.
Yeah.
Unless you just want, you know, the basic services that we expect as a society just fall apart. And it's also, I think, why governments are in such a, local governments are in such a difficult position right now, an increasingly impossible one. And so, like, that's the sort of bigger picture here. It's like, you know, it's easy to say, or easy to sort of have this concept, like, we're going to, you know, decrease taxes, step two, question mark, step two, step three, profit, right? The South Park underwear gnomes. But I think the bigger thing is that, like, the population trends in Wisconsin are really emblematic of population trends across the country. Like, people are moving from colder to warmer climates. Mm-hmm. That is not about taxes.
Yep.
Right. But then you look at Minnesota and it's like, why are people moving to that cold state, which in many cases is like colder than here, yeah, even, and less so to Wisconsin. And I think one of the really important answers is that you have economic policies that have led to the growth of a thriving, you know, metropolitan region in the Twin Cities, whereas Wisconsin is really disinvested from the economic power, you know, potential economic powerhouses of the state. And I think about the UW system as like one big place that when you cut the UW system, you are cutting an engine of economic growth for the state. That's what you're doing. You can say that you are, you know, sticking it to, you know, quote unquote, like liberal professors and elites and so forth. But what you're doing is you're screwing over the economy of the state.
Yeah. So, I mean, what this all obviously comes down to what will be months from now, the final budget. But it feels like this would be a non-starter as far as something that Governor Evers would sign. But do you think that there's any room for a flat, any kind of flat tax, even if it was a little bit higher? Or do you think this is dead in the water?
No, I think this is based. It would be hard to say that this is not, you know, dead in the water. The question is, you know, how much, you know, how much do Republicans want to like press the issue and extend budget negotiations and go to the mats over this, right? Yeah. How long do they want the budget fight effectively to be? And I think, you know, one thing that is going to be interesting is how the narrative about the flat tax kind of spins out there. I think the thing that Republicans, the sort of advantage this sort of accrues to them in debates like this is that like not much information gets out there about what the flat tax is, because people are like, oh, it's a flat tax. It's simpler. It's, you know, easier. But the way of describing it is, this is not a tax cut. This is a change in the way that we're using the power of government to distribute costs and benefits in society. And what this is going to do is redistribute benefits to the top income bracket in the state. And what it's going to mean for the rest of us is, you know, how are we going to fund highway construction? How are we going to fund schools? Mm-hmm. How are we going to do all the things that we need to do? And, you know, maybe you get like 200 additional bucks, you know, if you're at the right part of the income distribution, and like,
that you're probably going to be spending on a sales tax anyways.
Yeah,
that'll exactly just go immediately to the increases.
Or property, by the way, taxes. Property taxes, which continue to go up, right? Somebody pays somewhere.
Exactly. All right. Well, Dr. Phil Rocco, thank you so much for joining us and explaining, breaking this down for us. I told at the break, I said, that Kansas story is really something. And so maybe a little bit more noise about that, I think, would be good.
It's but wild.
We will have you back soon. Thank you so much for your time, sir. And have a great day.
Be with you, as ever.
All right. Take care. We are going to go to the top of the hour news, and when we come back, thanks again. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Sucker, I ain't one. From now on, I'm keeping my pay. Ain't gonna deduct none. So put your 1044 where the sun don't.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart
which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.